Hello, welcome back. Tonight, we're going to move on to the issues of negotiability. We talked about what negotiable instruments are, who the parties to them. Now we're going to talk about how they work. How do you actually negotiate these instruments, and how do you use them? Last time we talked about the parties, we talked about what types of negotiable instruments you have, which are, they start off, of course, with promissory notes and certificates of deposits, and then they go to drafts and checks. And we're going to talk about how you use that commercial paper, the negotiable instruments. So remember, those terms are used interchangeably. Commercial paper is one way to say it. Negotiable instruments are another way. Negotiable instruments today are the preferred term because we're moving away from the term paper on everything for obvious reasons. And tonight we're going to talk about negotiability, and we're going to talk about the definitions and the requirements, the factors, and certain defenses to negotiability. Let's jump in. What is negotiability? Again, we get our definitions out of Article 3 of the UCC. We talked about the UCC last time. The Uniform Commercial Code sets up how negotiable instruments, it's a state statute governed off a United States, pretty much accepted in every state, uniform code. That's why it's called the Uniform Commercial Code, because it was written to be adopted by each of the states, and each of the states, except for Louisiana, have pretty much adopted it in total. There are some distinctions in each individual state, but primarily each state, whether you go to New Jersey or Florida or California or New York, has the Uniform Commercial Code, and it's very similar across all states. It is a state statute. And Article 3 governs negotiable instruments. And Article 3 states that whether an instrument is negotiable or not, it gives the definitions of that. And if an instrument is negotiable, it's governed by Article 3, and it's transferred by the process of what we call negotiation. Creative people, aren't they? Section 3103, you don't have to ever remember section numbers in this class, but Section 3103 defines negotiation, what it is. What is a negotiation of a negotiable instrument? It's the transfer of possession. Remember, this is a substitute for money. So when you transfer possession from one party to the other, that's negotiation. And it's whether it's voluntary or involuntary. When it's an instrument by a person other than the issuer to a person who thereby becomes the holder of the instrument. So when that negotiation changes hands, that negotiable instrument changes hands, that's the negotiation. What's the purpose of negotiability? Generally, negotiability is the form of the transfer that permits the transferee, the person receiving it, to acquire the rights in the instrument. And those rights can be greater than they would be under contract law, and we'll talk about that. The quality of negotiability in instruments creates opportunities for transfer and financing that streamline payments and commerce. That's the whole purpose of negotiable instruments. They're a substitute for money to be used in business for the purpose of commerce. Transfers can be made with assurance of payment without the investigation of the underlying contract, meaning the reason why it was drafted. What are the requirements in order for an instrument to be negotiated and negotiable? They are as follows, and we'll go through each one in depth, but these are the elements or the requirements of negotiability. Can I have that promissory note? Can I have that certificate of deposit? Can I have the draft or the check given to a third party? And if I can, what are the requirements that I can negotiate it? It has to be in writing. It's got to be in written form. It's got to be evidenced by a record. That's what the UCC says. It's got to be signed. It's got to be authenticated by its maker. So if I'm the one writing out the check, I have to sign it. It's got to be a promise or an order to pay money. The promise is with a promissory note or a CD. The order is with a draft or a check. And the instrument must contain that promise or order unconditionally. It's gotta say, I promise you that this will be paid, or I order you to pay it. It's gotta be for an amount certain. And that is not maybe exactly what you might think it is, and we'll discuss that in detail, but it's gotta be for a defined amount. It can't be for, hey, whatever he wants to pay you. It's gotta be a defined amount of money. It's gotta be payable either on demand, that means when you present it, or at a defined time, March 31st. And it's got to be payable to order, that means a specific person, or to bearer, that means the holder of the instrument, the person who has it. If it has all of those requirements, if it meets all of those requirements, all of those elements, it's negotiable, and it becomes the commercial paper, that negotiable instrument that can be transferred to other parties. Let's go through each one of these because they help build an understanding of what these actual instruments are. It's got to be a record. It's got to be in writing. A negotiable instrument under Article 3 has to be in writing. That can be a handwritten, it can be typed, it can be an electronic record, but it's got to be in writing. And it is important to note that this writing does not have to be on paper. It can be an electronic record too in our modern age, but it's got to be recorded. It's got to be in written form. Next, it's got to be authenticated. That means signed by the maker or the drawer. The instrument, whoever creates that instrument has to sign it. And the signature is the authentication. Now, in this day and age, electronic signatures can qualify. So it doesn't have to be a handwritten signature. It can be an authentication by electronic means. And there are state statutes and federal statutes that provide for a signature by electronic means and what qualifies as that. But it's got to be signed, authenticated by the maker or the drawer. It's got to be a promise or an order to pay. It's a promise if it is a promissory note or an IOU. It says that when you present this, this will be paid. If it's a draft or a check, it's an order to pay. The draft, it's whoever person is that the draft says will pay it. Okay, that's the drawee. And if it's a check, it's the bank who will pay it. The order for payment of money out of a particular fund is negotiable, but the instrument can refer to a particular account or merely indicate a source for reimbursement. Either one. It's got to be for an amount certain. And we discussed this a few minutes ago. That amount certain doesn't say that it has to be for $400, for example. But it's got to be an amount that can be calculable. $400 plus 1% interest up until the time of the payment. So if the instrument is made on May 3rd, and then it is presented on August 3rd, you calculate the $400 plus the 1% interest up to the date of presentment, and that's how much that person gets paid. That is an amount certain because it's calculable. you can determine what it is. But you can't write out for how much the person thinks it's worth, or for whatever you want to pay this person. It has to be a calculable amount. That's what amount certain means. It's got to be payable in money, cash money. Now, does it have to be paid in US dollars? No. So you could have it paid in Canadian dollars. You could have it paid in French francs, or in euros, or in rubles. But it's got to be money, and it's got to be cash money. And that's how it gets paid for. Okay. It cannot be, you can't pay off a certificate of deposit with a check, for example. Okay. You have to pay it off in money. Okay. It's got to be paid at demand or at a definite time. So when you pay it off, when you present it, that's a demand. I'm demanding you to pay it right now. That's on demand. At a definite time is pay to X person on March 31st. That's a definite time, okay? An instrument that's not dated is issued to the payee. Any holder may correct the date, but it is deemed if the date is missing on demand. Okay. Lastly, it's got to be paid to order or to bearer. Order is a specified payee. So I will say that I'm going to pay this to Jim Jones on May 31st. That is order paper. That is a designated party. Bearer paper is when there is no designation, or you just say that it'll be payable at this date. It doesn't have to be a specified person. It's whoever holds the document, whoever has it. Now, what are factors that don't affect negotiability? Omitting a date of execution, or antedating or post-dating an instrument, it doesn't matter. It still can be negotiated. Post-dating is inserting or placing an instrument at a later date. Now, you can't get paid until that date, but it's still negotiable. It's still be able to do it. Provisions relating to collateral, such as collateral security for the debt, a promise to maintain, protect, or give an additional collateral, also don't affect negotiability. But it's, again, in the very definition of a negotiable instrument, it's got to be an unconditional promise or order to pay. The fact that the collateral is pledged doesn't matter. The fact that it is a conditional order or promise to pay does, and that will affect the negotiability. Sometimes language, people are human beings, and sometimes language in the instrument itself can be ambiguous. And there are provisions within the UCC that be able to determine that ambiguous language. The ambiguous language is language that has more than one reasonable interpretation. To give an example, when you have on a check, you write out the amount in addition to putting the numerals of the amount. Words control figures. If there's a conflict where you write out a specified font as sum and the numbers don't match on that, you go with the writing out amount. Seems kind of counterintuitive, but that's the law. Handwriting supersedes typewritten or printed. Why? Because it shows that the person making it is making corrections to the document. Typewritten also supersedes pre-printed. Why? Again, because that shows that it's being corrected. If there's a failure to provide for the payment of interest, or if there's a provision of payment of interest, but no rate is mentioned, the judgment rate at the place of payment applies to the date, to the instrument. There's something in New York State known as the legal rate of interest, which is 9%. That is what is substituted if they don't put in on an interest-bearing instrument the amount of the interest. If they also 9%, which is the legal rate of interest, will be substituted for that if it's not clear what the rate of interest is. Now, it has to be an interest-bearing instrument. Not all instruments are. So where they don't mention interest, none is paid. But if they say it shall be at an interest rate and they don't write it in, it is deemed to be the legal rate of interest. That is different in different states. And the legislature constantly discusses whether they should change that 9%, which was set in the 1970s. Most interest rates are not that high. Most interest rates in commercial contexts range, you know, for home mortgages, they can be in the threes and fours. Other commercial interest rates are generally in the sixes and sevens. Nine is a high interest rate. Now, credit cards, on the other hand, can be in the 20s. So, you put it kind of in the middle there with the legal rate of interest. Okay, lastly, statute of limitations. The UCC establishes a 3-year statute of limitations for most actions involving negotiable instruments. And as a result, statute of limitations will apply to transactions with those beyond that 3 years. That's it for negotiability. Next time, we're going to discuss limitations and issues concerning the warranties and problems of negotiable instruments. See you next time.